Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is Jeffrey Compton. Jeffrey's publisher of CDCGamingReports.com. And today we'll be discussing current casino news. Jeffrey Compton, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thank you for having me. I love doing this show.
Well, good. We're like, good to have you. In about 2 weeks, October 1st, the Palms Casino will be taken over by Red Rock Resorts, formerly known as Station Casinos. Jeffrey, how do you think this transition will go down?
I don't see a lot of immediate changes. Okay, the Palms is already a very strong brand and has a strong following. So we're not talking about taking over a casino that's, you know, in trouble or needs help. And Red Rock Resorts does not use the name Station on their higher-end properties, Red Rock Resort, Green Valley Ranch. So I don't see it becoming Palm Station in anything. Except for their top executives, Red Rock is keeping the current staff, especially those who interact with the customers. And so we won't see a lot of change over there. Now, I'm not the expert you are, Bob, but according to VP32, I went through the list of machines available on both floors, and they didn't look all that radically different. Now, of course, so I have no idea. And the blackjack rules are, you know, both of their overall, their aggregate holds are fairly close on blackjack rules. So I don't know if there would be changes there or not. You would know better than I would. Their clubs aren't that different. Yep.
I was just going to say a couple of things in that regard. I have a friend who is a dealer there, and they did show the dealers the new chips. The dealers all were wondering whether they were going to change to Palm Station. The new chips just say the Palms on them. So I don't know that that's a definitive answer, but, they don't make any mention of Palm Station. So
probably Station Casinos has a huge history, both good and bad, of acquiring other properties. And they know, I assume by this time, they've learned what works and what doesn't. And
right.
So their slot clubs aren't that much different. Now, I don't know if they're direct mail. I don't get direct mail from either one, so I don't know how much free play and double points days and 10 times points days and stuff like that they're doing. But I think the last thing that Red Rock would do is take away any benefits.
Right. I mean, the station's properties are much more quick to bar people,
from
the table games.
I know people have been excluded there one way or another, and I assume they will have the same fate at the Palms. But for most of the players, I don't think they'll see a big difference immediately. Down the road, there'll be some changes, but even if the current ownership stayed, there'd be change. What I mean is there's always changes. And I think it was an excellent idea to buy it. I said that when you told me about it, Richard. And I think it's a good fit for them. And now they'll have a property, a higher-end property, very close to the Strip. So I think it's probably a win-win all around. What they're going to do with the condos, that's another story. But I think everything else looks, you know, pretty decent.
Well, overall, the video poker will tighten up when it goes to Red Rock, in my opinion. And certainly there will be a 100 or two bodies flying out of there of those of us who are welcome to play at the Palms who aren't welcome to play at Red Rock. Red Rock, as a corporation, appears to have much tighter rules as to who they allow to play.
Do they trespass people, or do they just exclude them from the club?
different people have different situations. And there's some partial, like on a personal basis, I am allowed to have a card and allowed to play any machines I want, single points, no benefits.
Okay.
And so I am voluntarily staying away because as far as I'm concerned, that's equivalent to 86ing me. They have not trespassed me by any means, but they have made the playing video poker with one hand tied behind your back is not an interesting situation. So I will cash out all my points before October 1st.
Better hurry.
Thank you. Presumably the dollar for dollar, the Palms points will become station points. They both have current points which can be redeemed for free play as well as used for comps, and they both have old points. So presumably the old points at Palms, which are not redeemable for free play, will just get put into the old station bucket, dollar for dollar, is the best guess. All right, let's move on to something else.
Okay.
Ted Forrest, successful poker player who's run on some hard times. We did discuss Ted Forrest somewhat a while ago when talking to Michael Craig about the book The Banker, The Professor, and The Suicide King, Inside the Biggest Poker Game of All Time. In that book, Forrest was the suicide king, making and losing enormous amounts of money. That he should have money problems at some point isn't surprising. Interestingly, his attorney is claiming he was set up by the Wynn. According to Forrest's representatives, the Wynn knew he didn't have money. They had him open up a $100 bank account for the purpose of having a real account on the marker form and then issuing the marker. When he couldn't pay, they threw the book at him. What do you make of this, Richard? I'm sorry. We'll get Jeffrey first. What do you make of this, Jeffrey?
Okay, based upon everything I've read in the papers, and the accounts do not exactly match. I mean, there are fine details you read one way or the other. Forrest signed two markers or two post-dated checks. I've heard both. About 3 years back, totaling $215,000. In Nevada, unpaid markers and bad checks are treated the same way. And Nevada has one of the strongest bad check laws in the country. It's a lot more serious passing a bad check here than it is in other states. He also later signed a confession of judgment for $270,000, which basically says, I owe you the money. I absolutely owe you the money. And it included a payment plan, which I guess he has not honored at all, which forfeits any of his rights to dispute a claim in the future. Now, and also there is stories that he owes some serious money to some other casinos, including the Mirage. On the civil side of this, there is no defense. He owes the money. But to avoid criminal prosecution under the Nevada bad check laws, he is using, which he could go to jail for, he is using the, they knew that the markers and checks were worthless at the time, defense. You know, I only had $100 or whatever. I told them I was broke. There is a thing in the law, and I'm not a lawyer, but this I learned in business school law, called the Uniform Commercial Code, which basically covers all written instruments. A check or a marker is a written instrument. And what it says is that any agreement involving the check, okay, has to be in writing. Any agreement involving the marker. So if he told them he was broke, which I don't believe, but even if he had it on a recording that I'm broke, there's no way I can pay this, it wouldn't even work. It has to be in writing. And now he had previously won $6 million, I believe, playing poker, though none of it recently. And he recently had won a $2 million weight loss bet and received only $70,000 so far because the person claimed he was drunk, well, not Foster, the other person. And so why would the Wynn be willing to loan money to someone who said they were broke? I mean, if I was trying to hustle a marker, the last thing I would say is I'm broke. And now I also wonder why the Wynn is pursuing this as either a civil matter or more seriously as a criminal one. I mean, do they think he's hiding money, that he has the money and it's hidden in some offshore account? Or do they want to make an example out of him to get a better deal from other players who owe them money? And personally, I think the idea that you're taking a well-known player to and possibly putting them in jail is not exactly great publicity for your establishment, especially when you're supposed to have a solid relationship with these people. But I don't believe the defense that he told them he was broke.
Yeah, I find it odd, as you say, Jeffrey, that they're prosecuting it. I think, one approach would be to find a way for him to work it off, right? Make him a poker ambassador, put him to work, in your poker room or something.
Places have done that.
Yeah, well, hey, it worked for Steve Wynn in the past. I mean, look at Bobby Baldwin. That worked out pretty well for him. I find it kind of bizarre. The thing that I find really bizarre is how these poker players can just go broke all the time. It's just mind-boggling to me. Coming from a background in professional gambling where poker players seem to be a different breed. Other kind of people in professional gambling think about bankroll management and Kelly Betty and all this kind of stuff constantly. And, so these kind of lifetime swings of going broke.
Yeah, there was the one who won, Stu Estre. I'm getting the name wrong, but Stu Unger won a big tournament and died broke from a drug overdose, I believe, rather short time later. And so I don't know. It's the nature of the, as Bob said in the setup question, this gentleman was known as the Suicide King. So obviously going through large amounts of money was not a big deal. And I don't know, I don't know if he has a history of bad habits or, anything else, but there are people who are, just do not manage money well. I'll be honest with you. I'm one of them. But so I can understand.
Good, maybe we can talk about you on this radio show in a few weeks.
but I don't have, I don't owe any casinos any money.
Oh, but, okay. Maybe we won't talk about you then.
Okay. But I mean, there are, please remember, when he won the $6 million, he didn't think that was the last of the winnings. And,
I understand.
For sure.
Yeah. So, and what's really funny is the story about the weight loss bet. And that it was $2 million against somebody, and the person has only paid him $70,500, and claiming that the bet was invalid because the other party was intoxicated at the time. Well, you don't pay a partial of a bet and then say the bet was invalid. You pay nothing and say the bet was invalid. So,
we could do a whole show on weight loss bets.
The other thing that I would say just about that weight loss bet, it didn't happen overnight, right? So if I believe the bet was with Mike Mattisau, if he thought the bet should be invalid, he had quite a length of time to say, wait a minute.
Sorry. Wait a minute. This isn't it. This is invalid. Right.
Yeah. Like, I was drunk. I was, goofing around or whatever. But, whatever.
So, I think it was a legitimate marker. I think he had somehow convinced the Wynn that he could pay it back. He did sign a confession of judgment. He did agree to a payment plan, which he did not honor. I think it's sad that they're taking him, that they want to put him in jail over it. I really do. And I just get the feeling there's something we're not hearing.
All right. Good.
Okay.
I think we've
beaten up dead forest quite enough. Federal Trade Commission, FTC, is considering coming down against resort fees used by hotels, especially Las Vegas. What's this all about, Jeffrey?
Not necessarily just Las Vegas. They're going after resort fees in general. And they're not, they cannot, the FTC cannot ban resort fees. Okay? I mean, how people take money from other places, from customers, is their business. Okay? First, let's say, how did resort fees arrive in the first place? Over the years, hotels have always had a source of extra income besides whatever they charge per night in a hotel room. And I'm not talking about restaurants or casinos. I mean, they made money off of the telephone for years. You know, if you used the telephone, it was very expensive. If you used the pool, they had extra pool fees. They had extra spa fees. They had the mini bar, which you don't see that much in rooms anymore. They had in-room videos. You know, you go get the hotel room and rent the dirty movie, which they don't do that much anymore because people use streaming or their, you know, what some other method. So that income has sort of gone away. Plus the online booking, the internet, has made basic room rates very competitive. Somebody's going to New York, they line up all the fees, and they decide, you know, of these six hotels are comparably the same, so I'll stay at that one, even if it's only $1 a night cheaper. So they decided, somebody came up with this idea that we put together a package of extras, internet, pool fees, spa, whatever, and make it mandatory, though, that every guest pays for it. It's not like you come in, do you want the internet? No. Oh, do you want the pool admission? Yes. Well, that's an extra $3. No, they made it mandatory. In 2012, the Federal Trade Commission stated that these fees were okay as long as they were disclosed at the time of booking. Now, there's the rub. What they were implying is when the room is booked online, even through a third party, you would tell them that there's a $15 or $20 extra fee. But the hotels interpreted it as, well, we'll tell you when you check in. Well, you know, when you check in, you don't have usually a lot of choices. You know, all the other hotels are booked, and you're not going to sleep in the street or go back home. So it's a little late to change plans. So now, and it's only a rumor, there has not been an official statement, the FTC is saying that they now have to roll it into any room quote. Any room quote has to include the resort fee, which for all intents and purposes will kill the resort fee. Are you familiar with airlines? For a lot of times you'd see particularly international rates. For many years, had the international rate, but did not include the airport fee, taxes, and security charge, which on international flights can go over $150. So now, when you book a ticket, they have to show that to you. So that's very much now. Of course, that was going to a different party, but so that is where the FTC is concentrating on this, and it could seriously cut into, you know, hotels, because the hotels make good money on those resort fees.
Well, yeah, I just think it's long overdue. It's about time that we get to see what the room is actually going to cost when we're trying to book the room.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's like, I'm not sure it's going to be any cheaper. It's just but you'll know it's $110 up front rather than thinking it's $80 and getting booked for $30 resort fee. A related subject would be taxes on the rooms. In Vegas, there's a
sales tax and a city tax and a convention center tax, which might go up if the Los Angeles or Las Vegas Raiders come into being. So I would think disclosing what the total of the taxes would be in the same.
I haven't booked a room lately, but I have noticed that sometimes you see that, or you see it in some booking sites now will tell you this is what your total bill is. It's like rent-a-car charges. You know, rent-a-car charges don't include a lot of stuff that they break your arm and they won't give you the car unless you agree to. But now it's more, here's what your total bill will be. Okay, including the airport fee.
Yes.
So I personally don't see this as a huge disaster because they all have to do it at once. But the hotels don't want to change their modus operandi right now. Okay, and also they could see it that if it is all going to get disclosed, you're going to start getting that we don't charge resort fees or some other method of getting competitive.
All right, let's move on again. I mentioned the Las Vegas Raiders. Now, although they won in the first week on arguably against the odds 2-point conversion, the Raiders may be coming to Vegas. Anything new on this front, Jeffrey?
Well, you did pretty much beat up the subject last week with Anthony
yes.
Curtis. But there's been a few news stories that have struck my eye. Wayne Newton wants a piece.
Oh, well, that changes everything.
Yes, yes, yes. He wants a piece of the Raiders if they move to Vegas. For what it's worth, I don't know how much money Wayne Newton has. Their sources differ all over on his finances. Or did he just want his name in the media and saw this as a good way to get his name in the media? I also noticed it was in an item discussing the hockey team. And this would be a good question to pose. The hockey commissioners felt that there wouldn't be a lot of gambling on the hockey team because the hockey team's draw will be local Las Vegans and not tourists. But the pitch by the pro stadium forces is that the NFL games will be an excellent tourist draw. If we play Green Bay, we will get the Green Bay Packer fans that weekend. If we play Pittsburgh, we get the Pittsburgh fans. So they feel that this would be, add to the tourist draw, where the hockey team is saying the exact opposite. It's going to be a local attraction. Admittedly, they both may be right. So
yeah, NFL is a much, much, much bigger deal than NHL.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not done yet.
Yeah.
I was just leaving at that point. Also, although it's a long shot, I do appreciate Carolyn Goodman's efforts to get the stadium located near downtown Las Vegas in Cashman Field, which is may or may not be moving the ball field out of there. And, her and her husband, for the last, 14 years, have been trying to revitalize downtown. And a lot of it has worked. Some of it hasn't, but a lot of it has worked. And I think and has gotten very positive results. I mean, I have seen revitalization efforts that turn off, in other towns, that turn off all the current owners, who feel that they've been there's a term, gentrified out of the neighborhood. Though, like the El Cortez, which is the same owners, well, same people running it all this time, think the world of the efforts of the Goodmans in revitalizing downtown. So I know this is a little off the subject, on a tangent, but that did remind me that, those two deserve a lot of credit for what downtown is.
Kudos to the Goodmans.
I could see putting the football stadium down there. I don't think that's a bad idea at all. It certainly would do wonders for downtown.
Eh,
You're talking about about putting it where the baseball, where the
approximately
baseball?
Where the baseball is. You know, Cashman Field is a whole facility, you know. So, putting it approximately down there. And
it
now,
is essentially adjacent to the Vegas version of Skid Row.
Yeah, which would destroy the Skid Row and clean up the area. I mean, that's kind of what happened with the Staples Center.
And I've been part of this discussion. When you move Skid Rows, they can't be destroyed. They have to be relocated.
Yeah. That's okay.
True.
Yeah. So, but I think, you know, I think it would be intriguing. I also think, to be honest, that if it was downtown and part of the Goodman effort to revitalize downtown, they would get a lot more public support for the, 270 or $750 million they're asking to be kicked in by the state via hotel taxes. And so I would think they would get more public support for it. As Richard just said, that idea intrigues me. I don't know if the idea of it being on Russell Road further down from Mandalay Bay is as intriguing.
Sports betting. New Jersey tried to get sports betting allowed through the Supreme Court. Supreme Court says no. So what's next? What do you see next on sports betting?
Okay, it was the New Jersey Supreme Court that said no, not the Washington, D.C. Supreme Court.
Okay.
And they did appeal it to the Supreme Court, but nobody thinks it's going to go anywhere. So this ruling pretty much rules out exceptions to PASPA, okay, which is the congressional act that they now refer to as the failed law. But remember, that failed law was pushed by the casino industry via Harry Reid in 1992 in order to maintain Nevada's monopoly. And so now they don't want Nevada's monopoly anymore. So the only path is through Congress. This item has been the main item on the American Gaming Association, AGA's plate, for at least a year. Mainly, and the route they've used to attack it is not that everybody should bet on sports. Their argument is everybody already bets on sports, except that 98% of those bets are passed through illegal enterprises, and some of those illegal enterprises are funding things that we do not want funded. So last week, the AGA hired a guy named Eric Baisberg, I think I'm pronouncing that right, to be Vice President of Public Affairs. He has quite an extensive resume, including working with the Clinton campaign in Massachusetts recently. And I assume that getting PASPA repealed through Congress will be his major priority for at least the next 2 years, because they think it might take that long. I have not had a discussion with them. I don't know if it's if the hill is people opposed to repealing PASPA. Now, there are some local casinos who are opposed to Nevada casinos who are opposed to changing PASPA, but they're not members of the AGA. I assume the AGA has all their ducks in a row this time on this kind of change. But I don't know if it's opposition or if it's just getting something through Congress in a difficult situation. You know, we've all heard about continual problems with there. Now, my guess is this is one issue that Trump would, if we have President Trump, don't gag, if we have President Trump, that issue would probably stand a lot better chance of getting through.
Did you say that Nevada casino owners are not part of the American Gaming Association?
Yeah, many of the independent Nevada casinos are not members. They're members of something called the Nevada Resorts Association, which was the father of the American Gaming Association. But they are not members of the AGA. And, for example, the list is no longer public on who's a member. CDC Gaming Reports, by the way, is a member. But I don't believe that the Atlantis, for example, is a member. I don't think that the El Cortez, I know the El Cortez is not a member. I don't know if Stations is still a member. They were, and then I heard they were no longer. And I'll be honest with you, I don't know. But not every casino in Nevada is a member of the AGA. Not every casino in the country is a member of the AGA. They've just made an effort to, and I think this is a very admirable effort, but they've just started allowing Indian casinos into the AGA. For years, you couldn't be a member if you were an Indian casino. So who, how that all goes down, I don't know. But it will be a major effort to, their major effort in the next 2 years will be getting PASPA reversed.
Do you have anything on that, Richard?
No, I'm just curious why you said that if it were reversed, it would have a better chance of going through if Trump was a president. Are you saying that you
Trump
think,
understands the issue? Trump understands the issue. Trump has friends in the business. Okay?
I see, because he was a casino owner.
Because he was a casino owner, you don't have to explain it to him. My guess is when he was a casino owner, he would have loved sports betting in New Jersey.
Sure.
And so what I'm saying is I think they would have I'm not saying Hillary Clinton is anti-gaming. I'm not saying that at all. But I'm saying that in order to make it a priority, and I have never discussed this with the AGA. I have never discussed this with anybody at the AGA. But my guess is that their chances would be a lot better if, just to get attention to the issue, if Trump becomes president as opposed to Hillary Clinton. For the record, I'm not voting for either one of them. But
okay. About Atlantic City. Generally, the news out of there continues to be bad. Taj Mahal is going to close within a few weeks.
The Trump Taj Mahal, yes.
And there's a ballot initiative on the in 2 months, which could end up being worse news for the city of Atlantic City. What do you make of this, Jeffrey?
By the way, Trump has nothing to do with the Trump Taj Mahal. Let's get that said, okay? My guess is that owner Carl Icahn, who does own the Trump Taj, probably wanted to close it for some time but needed an excuse, and the failed union negotiation. Remember, they were negotiating with two or three casinos, and they got it through the other ones, but it was take it or leave it. They left it. Then he announced he was closing and losing a hell of a lot of money. So I think he was sort of looking for an excuse to close the casino. According to an article we ran yesterday, the taxes on the two proposed casinos, one would be in the Meadowlands and one would be in Jersey City, which is south of Newark. Both of them are very accessible to New York, which, by the way, Atlantic City is not accessible, is not, in my opinion, conveniently accessible to New York City. Okay? So they would lose more of the northern New Jersey market to them. I don't know how much market New York City still provides Atlantic City. Okay? The taxes on the two casinos, the one in the Meadowlands and one in Jersey City, will be several times higher than what Atlantic City is currently paying. Something like 30 to 40% for the Meadowlands, something like 15 to 20% for the Jersey City one, and where Atlantic City right now pays about 8, maybe 9 with some local stuff. And you know, and I know, who pays those taxes, those increased taxes? The players, through tighter games, through less benefits, that sort of thing. So this has just come out in the last couple of days. Also, though, if it does pass, a good section of those taxes do go to Atlantic City to help it recover from its current problem. So how that works exactly, I don't know. I've seen polls. I've seen polls that have been split. I've seen polls where the measure will go down. Now, as we are coming on to the United States' most crazy election, all bets are off on what will happen. But in my opinion, I don't think it will pass. But that's just my guess.
Do you have any thoughts on that, Richard?
No.
Okay.
Do you not care about Atlantic City or what?
Yeah, I don't pay attention to a lot to what's going on back there. I know I should, but you know, it's just not as much on my radar.
Wherever Richard goes to play his secret game, it isn't New Jersey.
It's interesting, you know. I've always said slot clubs did not start in Atlantic. It did not start in Las Vegas. They started in Atlantic City, and because of the geography of Atlantic City, necessitated the slot club where it wasn't that needed in Nevada, and the day tripper slot player became the symbol of Atlantic City. So it's the largest It was the largest locals market in the country. So I sort of feel bad that it's fallen on hard times, and through overexpansion, poor management, or whatever. And so I will be sorry. I'm sorry to hear what goes on. The statistics just came out today that August was 6% down than it was last year. So even with, you know, so it's just not, I don't know if it will ever come back. And with the more potholes created by closed casinos, that doesn't help the situation.
Okay, moving on. California Internet Poker is dead for at least this year's legislative session. Are there any states where we could have new internet poker by the end of this year? Jeffrey?
First, let's talk about California.
Okay.
There's one person you can't pin the defeat on. Sheldon. You can't pin the failure of California Internet Poker to get through the legislature. You can't pin this one on Sheldon Adelson. Okay, who's the big vocal opponent of internet gambling?
A lot more than vocal.
Yeah, and he was the one who got the AGA to reverse its stance or neutralize its stance. And so you can't. So what happened with this current one is you had the latest proposal, which was the 11th. Try in 8 years. The latest proposal was supported by 7 tribes, including Ale Caliente, Pechanga, and Barona, who liked it because the bill excluded international poker companies for 5 years. The way it excluded most of them was anybody who was considered a bad actor, had broken some rules, was excluded for 5 years from the California poker scene. So this rules out mainly PokerStars and its parent company, Amania, okay, which are the big players in that field. However, the other tribes, Morongo, San Manuel, plus some of the card clubs like the bicycle clubs, plan to partner with PokerStars. So that's how the bill died. And they couldn't come to an agreement on it. It was not because of lobbying by Nevada or by anybody in Nevada or anything like that. So,
this is about all those guys trying to carve up the money, you know, and until they come up with a split that they can all agree on, you know, it's not going to go through. I mean.
Remember last election, 1 or 2 years ago, where Station Casinos was trying to get a casino through, and it came up for public vote, and all the other Indian casinos lobbied against it. And right at that time, you had the, I can't remember the name of the casino, but the tribe had broken the open warfare, and they stormed the casino, and the casino shut down. And so what I'm saying is, on some issues, there isn't a lot of tribal unity between tribes. So
Yeah.
Okay. They get as, And so now they're back to there is a chance it could pass in Pennsylvania. A slim chance. There's still a bill in Pennsylvania, which Sheldon can't fight that one because he owns a casino in Pennsylvania. And lobbying laws are very strict on casino operators doing any sort of lobbying in Pennsylvania. So it could pass.
Daily fantasy sports. Now, Nevada, they aren't currently legal here, but they are legal in New York and several other
places. It is legal here.
Well, not DraftKings and not...
not the way they want it, but it is legal.
Yeah.
Okay?
Correct.
Okay.
How do you see
eight... Yep.
Yeah? Go ahead.
Eight states have passed it. Okay? New York, Colorado, Massachusetts among them. And they're fighting it out in several others. Last year, Nevada ruled that it was gambling. Now, Nevada does not have anything against gambling, but they consider that to be gambling. FanDuel and DraftKings do not want to agree because that could cause problems in other states. Now, we have to realize what's at stake here. The Nevada DFS market is not particularly large. I mean, the markets are pretty much dependent on total population, and Nevada is one of the least populated states in the country. Okay. But DraftKings and FanDuel liked holding events in Las Vegas. And did several large events in Las Vegas until it was ruled illegal, okay, or then ruled as gambling. So, and the Nevada market would like these events in Las Vegas, as they love events in Las Vegas. So they are quietly trying to work this out, though they haven't come to any compromise they can get through the legislature. A couple of local experts have suggested a few things, which is basically careful wording, very similar to the ceasefires you see in the Middle East, but and everybody can interpret their own way. But right now, that's the issue. It's not the issue that FanKings and FanDuel and DraftKings want the Nevada market. It's just not that big. They just want to be able to hold their events in Las Vegas.
So, and in the meantime, Vic Salerno has come up with a paramutual version of Daily Fantasy, which apparently has been passed.
Is in the works.
And we'll
see how that goes. And I guess DraftKings, I read, has gotten their act together with more financing. After they sort of blew their purse on advertising last year. I don't sit through sports events, so I don't know if they're still advertising as much as they were last year at this time. And
not as much, but they're definitely advertising.
And the other thing is there's rumors that they might merge. The owners, I know for a fact, get along with each other very well, so they may merge. But, of course, that would bring up questions of monopoly questions and all that. So, But that's, you know, I think eventually they'll come to terms with everybody. And now I think it's I don't know about what you people think. I think it's gambling. And but I do know people who truly, you know, put very little money into it, but truly do enjoy it. So, you know.
You can enjoy gambling.
Yeah, well, but I agree. I of course agree with you that it's gambling. But I don't understand why that's even an issue. You know, I mean,
if they agree that it's gambling, it automatically rules them out of other states, Richard. Okay, that have larger populations. You know, they had to go to great lengths.
Their argument that we're a game of skill, so it's not gambling, was ludicrous. I mean, poker's a game of skill, but it's also a game of gambling. So, you know.
I agree with it too. You know, but that was their reason was they would be excluded from larger markets if they had come in under the Nevada gambling laws. At least that's what I'm told.
All Nevada wanted was for them to be licensed, you know, by gaming. But then, yes, they would have to admit that meant they were. If you need to be licensed by gaming, then that means you are a gambling outfit. So, yeah, I can understand what the game they're playing.
Do either one of you participate or know somebody who actively participates in DFS?
Sure, we've had guests on the show who are very good at it.
Okay. Other than people who are at it, who are good at it to make money, okay, is this something that is, you know, that I do for maybe a year or two and get bored with? I mean, is it something that, you know, is it something like my theater habit, which I've had for 40 years, or is it something like, oh, okay, I tried it, it was fun, but I sort of lose interest as the novelty wears off?
Well, I don't know.
We're going to have different takes on that. Generally speaking, if you're not a pro at it, you're going to lose at a pretty high rate.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you're betting $20, $50 a week, and it makes watching the games on Sunday just a whole lot more interesting, people can keep that habit up for a long, long time because that's a way to gambling on the game is a way to make watching the game interesting. And if you have money on the game, whether it's DFS or otherwise, you're looking at something very different than the people who just care about who wins the game.
Yeah, and it makes a game, particularly if neither one of the teams you are emotionally attached to because you lived in the town.
Yeah, it's it may not matter who wins the game, but if this particular quarterback throws for this many touchdowns, that could be a big payday for you.
Mm-hmm.
So you get upset when they run the ball in that case.
Well, you know, I'm the one who always says that we should allow betting, we should allow wagering on elections in America.
Ah, we should. And,
yes, because it would make it a lot more interesting. What?
Sort of. I mean, the predictit.org is a legal way, although...
I know that. I'm familiar with it.
So, but yeah, I think we should have more betting on elections. All right, we have a few more things. We're going to take a brief break for commercials. We're talking to Jeffrey Compton, publisher of CDCGamingReports.com. South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. Every Thursday in September, 25 people get to spin the wheel for $500,000 Big Spin and Win promotion. If your name is called over the loudspeaker, which may be heard all over the casino, if you have 4 minutes to make your way to the showroom, the wheel has prizes of $1,000, $5,000, $10,000, and $25,000 with an average win of $42.50. After each week's drawing, you may begin to start earning tickets for next week's drawing. Each day, there's a maximum of 1,600 tickets you may earn, $1 per ticket video poker, $1 gets you 4 tickets for real, midnight to midnight. Last year, when the contest finished, they were under the guaranteed amount, so they kept drawing names 5 at a time until they exceeded the amount that they promised to give away. Don't know if this is going to happen this year. You don't know how many 25,000 hits are going to happen. But if it does happen, that'll make the last week
a better gamble. Since the day for this promotion is midnight to midnight, if the hours work for you, you can go late at night, say 11:30, finish up your 1,600 points just before midnight, and then once the witching hour strikes, start on tomorrow's 1,600 points. Keep in mind that the casino day goes from 3 a.m. to 3 a.m., so if you play exactly 1,600 points before midnight and then play again after midnight, it will look like you're playing 3,200 points in one day, but for the drawing, it will count as 1,600 points on each of 2 days. Next week's free video poker class, Wednesday, September 21st, at noon, is Advanced NSU Deuces Wild. This advanced class will define and identify all of the penalty card situations in this game, and there are a lot of them. Anyone may attend, but the presumption of the class is you already play NSU at the basic level. If this is not the case, you will probably not be able to keep up with the class. The class will be held in the Silverado Lounge, which is near the northwest corner of the casino. At the Palms, between now and the end of September, they'll have drawing Saturday night, 7:15 p.m. Winners share $10,000 each night. Every day, Monday through Friday, you can swipe and receive 20 free drawing tickets. PFP play for prizes until tomorrow, September 16th. You earn Albertson's gift card. For the last 2 weeks of the month, you earn TJ Maxx gift cards. Prizes are redeemed at a rate of 0.2% up to $190 per day. You keep the points. The remaining two Sundays are double points on video poker, 10 times points on reels and video reels. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play a lot of games. If you sign up for the gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get corrections on most of the games. Game of the week is Color Match Royals. This is a 10 coins per line game where you get paid for same color flushes, same color straight flushes, and same color royal flushes. That is, Ace King Queen of Hearts combined with Jack 10 of Diamonds gets you a 2,000 coin jackpot. It's called the same color royal. The strategy for this game is quite a bit different than regular video poker. To learn it, the gold membership at videopoker.com corrects you when you're wrong. So, with that correction, you can figure out a strategy should you want. On a different subject, on gamblingwithanedge.com, we have a new contributor, Jimmy Jazz, who has been a guest on our show 3 or 4 times, talking about how to get bang for your bucks with coupons and stuff like that, has started a new blog and will be a regular columnist on this site. Welcome, Jimmy Jazz. I think that's pretty cool. All right. Richard, how do people get in touch with us?
Well, first of all, we welcome your questions. You can send them to us at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com or facebook.com/gamblingwithanedge, or you can tweet them at us at RWM21. You can put your comments right on the show there at gamblingwithanedge.com, and that, you know, we love to see comments there to spur discussion about guests that we've had. Bob and I, you know, are both likely to contribute, and maybe the guests will as well. You can also get the show delivered to you automatically every week. You can sign up to do that at gamblingwithanedge.com or at iTunes, YouTube, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. And you can find an archive of every old episode at bobdancer.com.
All right. In a couple weeks, there's going to be G2E, Global Gaming Expo, which is the biggest trade show at...
in the United States.
It's not in the world?
The London show is getting quite large.
Okay, maybe you should go on a diet. All right. So, are you planning to be at G2E, Jeffrey?
Yes, we will mount CDC gaming reports. We'll have as many as a dozen reporters on the floor and in the sessions, and I just filled out all the paperwork. And so we will have a presence there. We don't do a booth. But we will have a presence there, and we will be covering every aspect of it. And to see, you know, generally what the new games are, I'm interested in the new concepts. I've talked a couple of people, one of them very informed at 58, and another one sort of informed at 23, to review all the millennial-aimed products. And so we'll see how it all goes down. But it should be something very, very interesting.
Yeah, I'm going to be contributing an article on CDC Gaming Reports on what I like video poker-wise at the show.
Mm-hmm. Good.
I've already seen some of the games. Cannot talk about them before the show, but after the show, I'll have the information to write about. The things I write about for Jeffrey's column are more management directed, and I'll write a similar but different column on Anthony Curtis's site on what I like from the player's point of view. So there's significant overlap, but they're not the same.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure we'll have a show after the show where we talk about what we've seen, as we have the last couple of years. I usually go to look at the table games, although it's really an exercise in frustration for me because I see all of these table games that just look, you know, make players drool when they see the possibilities, and then 95% of them never end up on the casino floor, so...
There's a reason for that, yes.
Yeah, right. Well, right. But one can dream.
Try not to drool so visibly this year.
Right. We were talking... I'm sorry, go ahead, Jeffrey.
No, keep going.
The other thing I was going to say is almost every article I read... about G2E this year is about esports and how every casino is trying to figure out how to capitalize on esports. We were talking about this briefly before the show. I do agree that this is just an enormous market, and somebody's going to figure out a way to make a lot of money off it, but I have no idea what that's going to be. But I am interested in it. So I'm going to, I'll be looking at whatever they have in terms of that as well. I'm curious if there's any virtual reality stuff that they're going to try to do.
That I don't know. Most of the planners of this year's G2E, who I work with on various levels, are considerably younger. I mean, any of them would be old enough to be my children, okay? Young enough to be my children. And so you do have, G2E has gotten a younger outlook over the last few years. And a lot of that is good. For example, I've noticed the panels and the keynote speakers and things like that tend to be more experts from other industries bringing, like, security or subjects like that, Homeland Security and things like that, or and they're getting away from sessions, which are basically consultants hustling their wares.
Yeah.
And so I think that is a good thing. What is, yes, I do wonder about the, a lot of the focus is going to be on the issues we discussed, DFS, sports betting, esports, internet poker, those sorts of subjects. And I wonder, I do wonder how, you know, if that's a little too much overkill from traditional gaming. You know, there is a concern about the aging traditional gaming audience. So, and I can't really fully comment on a show that hasn't happened yet. But sure. But I am a little concerned about that.
All right.
You're a little concerned about the aging.
The over-focus on non-traditional gamer or new gaming, like I say, esports, sports betting, that sort of thing.
All right. So. We've been talking to Jeffrey Compton. Thank you, Jeffrey. It was excellent information today. We'll talk to you again soon. Thank you. Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.